What is the road ahead for Jacksonville's utility? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. And just ahead, a conversation with Aaron Zahn, the CEO of JEA. What are your energy questions? You can get on the line right now and join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look at new challenges to Florida's child welfare system. Plus, it's a preview of the new film celebrating the unsung heroes of the golf world, The Caddies. We'll tell you about loopers later in the hour. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it is a busy time for the First Coast's city-owned utility. JEA is looking at everything from potential future rate hikes to figuring out how to incorporate more renewables into their portfolio to planning for a move to a new corporate headquarters. With all of that going on, we thought it was a good idea to learn more from the man leading the organization. Right now, Aaron Zahn, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer of JEA, joins us now in studio for a discussion about the future of energy. Aaron Zahn, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great to be here. Certainly the future of JEA and our city is a conversation that I welcome and look forward to being able to put out the facts and the data around what we're looking at JEA and how we're going to solve some of the challenges that are ahead of us.
And there's so much to talk about. So we welcome your calls for Aaron Zahn, who leads JEA. Give us a call right now. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open as well. Okay, so last week at the JEA board meeting, a discussion was held about the potential for steep increases over the next 10 years in both electric and water rates. That's if JEA continues its status quo approach, as it was explained to your board, in the face of changes to the utility industry. Can you explain what the financials look like for JEA? What kinds of increases are you looking at, concerned about, and what's the plan to address that?
Absolutely. As the community is aware, we're in the first part of strategic planning, and the first step in everything is to acknowledge reality. And the better you do that, the more appropriate your response can be. And what people need to know is over the last 10 years, we've already had steep rate hikes, 71% in the last 10 years. We've added 65,000 customers, which is the equivalent of the entire city of Tallahassee, while our sales have declined 8%. And the reality is that started in August 8th of 2005 when President Bush signed into law the Energy Policy Act, which you know as Energy Star, mm-hmm. right?
The Energy Star rating for appliances.
Absolutely. And yeah. So what that changed was customer behavior. And what we've seen is while we've continued adding customers, our sales have actually continued declining. And as we look forward, that trend continues. In fact, actually, the technology around LED, HVAC, water heaters, insulation, windows, those are here to stay. And we have not hit a saturation limit where our entire community is going to see a reversal of that trend. The issue is that in the last 4 years, what we started to see is other disruptive technologies enter our market, like solar and battery. And so when you layer each one of those trends on top of each other, what it does, in the absence of JEA participating in those markets, we're left with only a finite number of tools, which is raising rates. Mm-hmm. So what we put forward was effectively what we call scenario planning. Scenario one, which is what does the world look like if you keep driving straight? Mm-hmm. And it is certainly a reality. We hope as a management team, as a board, and as a community to make that not the reality that comes to fruition. But certainly it is a reality if we don't start having very real factual conversations about the future of JEA.
And what does that mean? What choices will you be making in order to stay viable?
So the next step, and I think we provided this to the public in our board meeting, is to effectively design a scenario number two. And scenario number two will be continuing a trend that JEA has undertaken for the last 10 years. Most people don't know that we've reduced our workforce by over 20% already. Already 400 jobs have been eliminated. We've cut costs substantially. This past year, we took some dramatic steps that people wouldn't have expected, announcing our STAR plan about paying off over $1 billion in debt in the next 5 years, executing long-term 250-megawatt solar PPAs. Absent some of those steps that we took as a management team in this past year, we'd be talking about rate hikes now. And so what we've done is bought ourselves some time. And so what you look forward is we can absolutely always get more efficient. And as the as our business continues to shrink, we can look at cutting costs. The other thing we can start looking at is revenue growth opportunities. In fact, this too is not unique to JEA, and it's not also unique to this today. In fact, JEA looked at getting into retail natural gas, if you recall, some 5-7 years ago, and now that's Peoples Gas, and it's owned by TECO. Mm-hmm. We also looked at LNG. That's now Southern Company, a Georgia utility. So there have been efforts in the past where JEA has not been successful. And our hope is that out of this conversation, we as a community can start really aligning in, around JEA's growth opportunities, whether that be subscription model energy efficiency, electrification like electric vehicles, solar, distributed water, because let's not forget, we are a dominant water provider in Northeast Florida as well, and one of the top five water utilities in the nation.
It's interesting to look at the status quo study. It predicted that in 7 years, in the year 2025, customers that use energy now through JEA can basically decouple from the utility by installing solar panels and battery storage. They can produce electricity at a cost lower than they would be getting from JEA. So in order for you to remain competitive with that reality in the marketplace, you have to diversify and look at these changes, obviously. And let me ask you as a follow-up. What's your response to the cynical take on this announcement? Those that have criticized the move by the utility, warning of rate hikes, they see this as a backdoor way to reopen discussions in Jacksonville about privatizing JEA at some point down the road, selling the utility off to an investor-owned company like Florida Power and Light or Duke Energy, getting that cash windfall for the city and just going back down that road again.
I'll say what I said over a year ago at the first board meeting where I was a board member, which was, that's the absolute wrong question. The right question is, how does JEA remain relevant to its customer?
Why is it the wrong question?
Because if you don't have a business that remains relevant to your customer, then it doesn't matter what the structure is. And right now, if you look at the statistics of the last 10 years, what you need to understand is that JEA needs to start to find ways to compete in the energy and water market as everyone else has been. And whether that's, and most people don't understand that, I look at our competition as Apple, as Google. Did you know that Apple has enough cash on its balance sheet today to buy almost the top 7 utilities in the entire United States? That's FPNL, NextEra, Emera, Southern Company, Duke, Progress. So, and they just announced that they are generating all of their energy from renewables. Google is doing the same thing. So when you look at it, I think the debate can be very politically charged, and I understand it because the stakeholders have a vested interest in JEA. And if you actually look at the history of JEA for the last 125 years, we take great pride in our JEA as a community asset. But if you get distracted by that conversation and stop and start focusing on what the main, you know, I have the saying in at work, which is the main thing about the main thing is it's the main thing. And our main thing is remaining relevant to our customer. And we haven't been doing a good job for the last 10 years.
What I hear you saying is in order to remain relevant, it sounds as though what you're saying is that privatization is still on the table, that you still want that to be considered. Is that right?
What I'm saying is that we need to design our operating model to start providing the services that our customers are demanding.
And does that include privatization of the utility?
That is, so the focus of JEA right now, and as part of our strategic planning, is to continue to design an operating business that provides affordable, low-cost, reliable services, both energy efficiency, distributed, on the energy and the water sector.
But you just said that that's becoming an obsolete model. So is the only solution in your mind down the road to privatize?
I don't consider that an obsolete model. I considered us to be the dominant last mile energy and water provider in Northeast Florida. And I certainly understand why people want to make this a politically charged conversation. I'm trying to just focus on the facts and the basics, which is in the last 10 years, we've had sales decline. We've raised rates by 71% of our customers. As we look forward, what we need to do is, without sensationalizing the future of JEA, which is very easy to do because we are a community-owned asset, and is to get distracted by what can be a politically charged conversation and stop focusing on what really is required in order to deliver the services that our customers
are
demanding.
Well, let's take the politics out of it and just look at the business case. Do you believe that the business case can be made to privatize the utility?
I believe the business case can be made to remain government.
But that's not what I asked.
I know.
Do you believe that the business case is viable to at some point sell off this utility to a private concern?
What
do
would
you
be
think
that
is? Well,
why would you do that?
Based on everything I hear you saying, it sounds as though you believe, and maybe some members of the board believe, that this is an option that has to be reopened.
So I think what we need to do is remain focused on designing the business that provides the services that our customers are currently consuming. This would be like having a conversation if you were Walmart or Target or a grocery store or the mom-and-pop food store. And this would be like not having a conversation about how do you compete with Amazon. And at the end of the day, shouldn't you first figure out how do you compete with Amazon? And some of that might just be morphing your business model, right? The conversation around around ownership is one that I believe is, you know, best served for people outside of this room. The conversation
But you're the CEO of the company.
Absolutely, which is why...
That's why we're so interested to hear from you. You are the ultimate arbiter of whether or not we're going to see this happen, you and the board.
Absolutely not. That decision is in the hands of the of the customers. They have the vote. The city council has that vote. That's not my decision to make.
But I'd like to know what you would like to see happen.
What I would like to see happen is that I have children and I plan to raise my family here. You have two children, right?
Right.
And I would like my children to return to a community that doesn't have rates that are 51% higher than they are today. I'd like to have my children return to a community that is financially prosperous and economically viable because we can continue to attract businesses to this community. And I think what that means is that we as JEA, both on the energy and the water space, need to design a business that continues to provide low cost, affordable, and reliable power and water. And if we do that and we do it right, then we'll have done our job.
And so it sounds as though, based on the last 15 minutes of conversation, in the short term, you expect to do that through a combination of cost efficiencies and diversification. Is that fair to say?
So I've heard the word diversification. I think cost efficiencies, absolutely. That has to be always be part of the conversation as you are looking at a price and supply constrained market. But diversification, I look at it as diversifying into other sectors of the energy and water business, not necessarily looking at businesses or lines of industries that are not where we do not have a core level of expertise.
Okay, let's go to some calls now for Aaron Zahn, the CEO of JEA. Lots of calls. It's 549-2937, and we'll get to your tweets in a moment and emails. Let's begin with Wesley at the Beaches. Hi, Wesley. Good morning.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Good morning to you. So my question here is, it seems like privatization is a hot button issue, but, it seems like the real problem is the fact that, you've had increased users and declining sales. And I was wondering if this has been happening across Florida. Is this something that, is happening only in Northeast Florida? I'm not really quite sure why that's been happening. And it seems like that's really the main issue.
Okay. Yeah. Is this something that other utilities are dealing with?
Wesley, thanks. That's a great question. The answer is yes. It is a nationwide, in fact, worldwide issue. It is because of the introduction of technologies that enable you, the consumer, to make decisions that you didn't have 10 years ago. And by the way, you've seen this in other industries. You've seen it on hotel versus Airbnb. You've seen it on taxi versus Uber. You've seen it on Kodak versus digital film. And the companies that are successful are the ones that find ways to remain relevant to their customers. And I can give you some examples on that. Netflix, right? Versus Blockbuster. Who made the right choice? Who saw the future of streaming video and decided that brick and mortar DVDs were no longer going to be the way of the future and you needed to find a way to serve the customer different? That's the conversation we're having at JEA. That's what we're trying to do in a methodical, transparent way. And it is a bit scary. I will acknowledge that. I mean, there are some elements where when you start looking at the challenges facing JEA, that the community needs to understand that these are the real challenges that aren't going away. And as we were talking earlier, Melissa, some people need to understand what was in the media sector, right? About 10 years ago, mm-hmm. The question was, would you have imagined 10 years ago social media and digital having the impact it had in the media sector? And the answer,
right,
I think, was no, right?
And with the pace of change in your business especially, innovation and disruption is simply the reality. Can a city-owned utility stay relevant in that energy environment? Is it even possible?
Absolutely. If you go talk to Sue Kelly, who's the CEO of American Public Power Association, she's talking exactly that way about how does public power remain relevant in the changing industry. I think public power has a ton of advantages over IOUs. We have rate making authority. We have some flexibility that IOUs don't have. So, it would be a shame that for people not to acknowledge some of the distinct advantages that we at JEA have as a public power entity.
What do you prefer, public power or investor owned?
I prefer designing a business that
it, I know, that but it, that's not which one. Just choose. What's the preference that you have?
I think you're asking the wrong question.
Why?
Because it. No one at
people want to know where you stand.
No one at Netflix ever had the conversation about whether or not they were going to sell stock when they were trying to figure out exactly how to take the business of Blockbuster. Nobody at Kodak, when they invented the digital photography in the 1970s, the board of directors didn't sit there and have a conversation about capitalization structure. What they had was a conversation about what would be the future of that industry. And it turns out Kodak made the wrong choice. Netflix made the right choice. Amazon, when I was in the retail commercial real estate sector,
but those are different forms of a business model. This is a binary choice for the most part, unless you only sell off parts of the utility to the private sector. Mm-hmm. This is city owned versus corporate owned. I mean, it's a different thing than saying that the business model for Blockbuster wasn't as competitive as the business model for Netflix. It's a different thing.
No, it's not. We actually do. So we perform the exact same business as IOUs. We generate electricity. We have transmission, distribution. We have phenomenal linemen. And let's not forget, we have 2,000 people that take care of 1.5 million people. So our 2,000, just to make this all about that one topic, ignores the value in the efforts that those 2,000 people put into doing what I'm saying is the main thing, which is providing service to the customer that's reliable and affordable. And so, when I look at it, it is the conversation and it is just about how do we as JEA in the confines that we operate in, start to continue to morph for the future, which is adopting all of these new technologies and being able to be both defensive and offensive.
Let's go to lots of calls. Gabe on the South Side. Go ahead, Gabe. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, thank you, Melissa, for taking my call. The Mr. Zahn, I think you've asked him a few times now to either elaborate or make a commitment about the future of JEA. And from what I'm hearing, he didn't say anything about not privatizing the public-owned utility company. So to me, that means, yes, in the future, they're probably looking at doing that. I'm not a business guy, and I'm not in the electrical industry. But what I've noticed is that JEA seems not to be focusing on renewables. And we're in the sunshine state. We have a lot of sun. We have a lot of renewables. We have a lot of sun, a lot of wind. I think JEA ought to be focusing on that. And I think the business model, JEA, I think they got it all wrong. I don't think they're focusing on the consumers that they're supposed to be serving. If they started from that standpoint and focused on the consumers.
Why do you think that, Gabe? I mean, I just want to know, why do you think that?
I don't see them diversifying. I think they're pretty much right now reliant on fossil fuels and a lot
okay.
of
I got your point. Yeah, I got your point. Like the transition from fossils to renewables. I appreciate that question, and I don't mean to cut you off. We just need to get in a lot of calls.
And Gabe, you are 100% spot on. One of the reasons I took this job was because I didn't see us focusing on the customer in the way we needed to. Now, we provide a high standard of customer service. In fact, we are one of the top utilities in the nation when it comes to JD Powers. The issue is we weren't providing the services the customers were currently consuming. On your renewable question, we just actually executed in the first quarter, I executed contracts for 250 megawatts of solar. That'll put the city of Jacksonville as one of the leading cities in the United States as a solar and renewable city. And when you think about that on a percentage basis of our average fleet, that'll be over 5% of our generation.
Could it be more?
Oh, absolutely. It could be more. In fact, if you were to be pairing it with batteries, you could be generating a lot more and being able to balance the grid so that you don't have reliability and service interruptions.
Do you agree with the notion that in the United States, we are so far behind other capitals around the world that have made the commitment to go to, if not 100% renewable energy, getting the vast bulk of their energy from renewables, which is difficult and expensive to do. But when Florida is criticized for moving too slowly on this, given all of our sunshine, what are your thoughts about that?
I think we're absolutely a leader in the state. We have some challenges with regard to humidity that the Pacific Southwest didn't have. We were a bilateral market versus not an organized market. There's a number of reasons why JEA and the entire state of Florida are moving slower. Although we are picking up pace, all of the utilities, including Orlando Utility Commission, JEA, GRU, FMPA, FMEA, FPL, Duke, everyone in Florida is now investing heavily in expanding their renewable footprint. And JEA is at the lead. You should take pride. We're leading the state on that. And not only are we leading the state on that, but on the water side, we are leading the state on purified water, water quality, water supply, and recycling and being able to reutilize all of the resources that come to us in wastewater. So most people don't know this, but we are innovating. We are putting taking renewable natural gas out of our wastewater plants and looking at putting it into natural gas pipelines. We are the leader in the state at looking at purified water challenges because we think we're going to have supply constraints in the 2030s. So I think even though a lot of the conversation has been around the challenges, what people need to know is at JEA, we've been innovating for the last 125 years. We'll continue doing so. What I'm having the conversation of is how do we engage the customer? And I think Gabe's exact point is right. How do we engage the customer differently so that we remain relevant?
Dave in Nassau County. Dave, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm hearing this discussion about renewables, and renewables are certainly a useful means of providing a power, but due to the varying nature of renewables, doesn't that also mandate an addition of fossil fuel powered backup generation? And why isn't more baseload power generated by carbon free nuclear developments? I mean, we should have the ability to proceed beyond light water reactors and into the next generation of things like either thorium or molten salt reactors. Where is JEA standing in, as far as that goes?
Okay, thanks for that question.
So I think you're hitting the point spot on, which is Jacksonville learned its lesson at JEA back in the 1970s when we were only relying on one source of fuel, which was oil, and we diversified into coal, petcoke, and eventually into natural gas. And we've been the beneficiary of natural gas prices for the better part of the last decade. You as a customer have seen a significant decrease because of JEA's moves. And now we're moving into renewables. Certainly we have a nuclear portfolio, and you know, our desire on that has always been publicly and we remains to find a way to restructure that for the benefit of all of our customers, because zero emission, very stable base load like nuclear is a very viable alternative for the future. It does have its cost issues because, you know, when you look at it and compare it to our solar contracts that we just executed, it's well more than five times the cost today. And so I think as a entire nation, we need to look at finding ways to make nuclear more of a cost-effective means and alternative. Because in the face of that, you, the customer, we can't. It is very difficult to continue to find ways to pass that cost on because you as a customer demand low-cost, affordable power.
Did you see the headline this week from across the ocean? In Great Britain, they have now gone 2 weeks without using any coal power to generate electricity for the first time since the Industrial Revolution. They hit solar power records as they pursue a rapid decarbonization energy program. Is the United States moving too slowly on this?
My personal opinion? Absolutely.
Yeah. And so as the CEO of this utility, as you talk about innovation and aggressively moving into renewables, what is the biggest challenge in doing that at the pace that we are seeing other nations, other players in this sector? What's the biggest challenge here in Florida to meeting that pace of change?
So number one is money. The cost of transitioning to all of those technologies and leaving behind the stranded assets that we would be leaving behind. We have very viable generating plants that currently have life cycles on them. And if we were to move to more renewables today, that by its very nature would end up costing customers significantly more. The second is really, as I mentioned previously, finding ways to drive cost out of the nuclear efforts within the United States. And then the third really is finding ways to drive the adoption of storage, and not just lithium ion, but flow and other battery systems to be at utility and commercial scale, because those will help in the what they call intermittency of renewables, which is, you know, wind only generates power when wind is blowing. Solar is only generating power when the sun is shining. And so you have to have the ways to store it so that when you, the customer at 8 o'clock at night in the wintertime, want to turn on your all of your lights, your HVAC, and do the laundry, you have the ability to do so.
Okay, lots of calls. Andy on the south. Andy on the south side. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, listen, I'm pretty frustrated listening to this conversation. Anytime we have a public servant uses terms like that's the wrong question, or uses terms like morph and relevant and engage, I just don't trust that they're telling us the truth. I just want to remind Mr. Zahn that 1 year ago, he made a public promise to oppose any effort to privatize the utility, to sell off the utility. Does this mean he has now changed his opinion? Has he welched on his promise?
Okay. And I realize you want to talk about things other than that issue, but there is certainly a perception that there is a backdoor momentum to privatize this utility, and you haven't definitively shut that down in this discussion. What about that?
I think we owe it to our customers to keep focused on the main thing, which is providing
low cost. But to customers, that is the main thing. I mean, we saw that overwhelmingly in the last election cycle. Overwhelmingly, the voting public spoke out and said they are not in favor of this change. So if you decide to make this change, and certainly I can see hearing you talk why you would be looking at this, how do you make that case to the public?
So the way I know a lot of my customers, I actually ran into Cheryl, a framer at Michaels, who I've known for 10 years. She's a customer of JEA's. And her exact conversation was, you know, Mr. Zahn, I want affordable, low-cost power because I live paycheck to paycheck. Did you know we have 40% of our population that's ALICE, that's asset limited, income constrained, they live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And so the concepts around scenario number one being that we raise rates would be debilitating to them. I think we need to find ways to be able to address that issue, and we need to be able to move into adopting new technologies. We need to adapt our business model in terms of moving from centralized utility to more of a distributed model. We need to be able to provide energy subscription services. We were talking about that at the beginning of the show. Being able to provide LED or HVAC units on a subscription basis as opposed to you, the customer, having to buy it up front. I know why people could be frustrated by that, by wanting to talk about a conversation that's not the relevant conversation. The relevant conversation is, if we do not find a way to make JEA relevant to the customer in the next 10 years, we will just have a repeat of what we've had in the last 10 years. And I will tell you, employees don't like that because that means reductions in force. The community doesn't like that because that means increasing in rates. That means we don't have the cash to be able to make the contributions to the city, which is over 10% of the city budget, so property taxes increase. It is all about having a viable long-term entity that serves the customer. That is the only question we need to be focused on, and we need to be able to talk about all of the things that are going to be required in order to make that happen.
Here is a tweet from the Jackson, sending me an article from another Florida newspaper, pointing out that another city-owned utility in Florida, Lakeland, is putting out cost savings for their customers. They will be able to start saving a little bit on their monthly bill starting in July due to energy portfolio changes they've made. What about that? Is that a fair comparison?
So I think what's missed is that JEA has already been doing this. The 250 megawatts of solar I just referenced are at a discount of 20% to our current cost of fuel. That is going to be a direct benefit to our customers. We are providing rebates on batteries, $2,000 if you put a battery into your house. We provide energy audits for your home to help you be more energy efficient. We provide all sorts of benefits that help our customers truly save money. In fact, we recently just rolled out, we're one of the first utilities in the entire nation to roll out an app on your phone that you can monitor your consumption real time and change your behaviors. So we are at the forefront of this in terms of innovation. Many of the people want to talk about challenges controversial issues when we're really sitting here talking about how do we help you, the customer, have lower cost, better, lower emission, and more affordable, reliable services.
Let's take a few more calls for Aaron Zahn, CEO of JEA. CJ is in Mandarin. CJ, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. my question or comment is, what are you doing to look at alternative sources of revenue? You mentioned you were looking to get away from centralized to more decentralized. Obviously, we have lots of real estate, both on people's roofs and in other places to do solar farms. I mean, could to go from 5% of total production of solar, it needs to be really 99% or higher, around that. Additionally, have you thought about other models? Think things like community fiber, to be able to offer, other types of services, because internet is kind of like the electricity of this new century. Things like that. And I just want to say as a final note, just real quick, sir, you have been very evasive to the host, to Ms. Ross and to the callers. Just say right now, do you believe that privatization is an option? That's all. I mean, just it's a yes or no question.
That's the $64,000 question. Yeah. Okay,
so
thank
let
you.
Me first address your questions, which are, how do we move into other lines of businesses? If we could find a way to finance and put 50,000 electric vehicles on the street, we'd generate over $100 million a year of additional free cash flow. That's a new line of business, but it's still in the energy business. What we need to be able to do is we need to be able to look at all of the different alternatives. So, for example, I just replaced my water heater. It was about a $2,000 investment. Interestingly enough, if I looked at the energy placard on that new water heater that I bought was $100 a year of energy. The one it replaced was $550. That means that the energy utility lost over $450 in energy. Now, what if JEA, rather than you having to spend that $2,000 as a customer, showed up and said, I'll tell you what, I'll put that in for a small upfront charge of $100, and then over time, we recoup that investment plus a return. Those are things that we currently aren't allowed to do. And so I look at it as we need to look at all alternatives, every alternative. And that includes business models, that includes talent, that includes
includes privatization.
That includes all alternatives.
And so, including privatization.
That includes all alternatives. And what I'm not going to do is play gotcha media. What I am going to
I'm not trying to do a gotcha. I'm just trying to serve the listeners of this community who overwhelmingly want to know where the utility stands on this. It's not a gotcha. We're just trying to get that information. That's
where
all.
The utility stands is exactly where the board of directors voted in May of 2018. They voted on a resolution not to explore privatization. So that is where we are today. Now, as we're looking at the future, we are looking at the business model. We are looking at what talent need. We're looking at the training we need for our employees, because those employees that service solar and batteries need a far different training level than those that service transmission and distribution. So we're looking at all of those. We're looking at the capital requirements are going to be needed. If we were to launch an initiative where we tried to electrify all the buses and cars in the city, we would need a lot of capital to be able to invest in that. So we're trying to find the right partners to be able to do that. If you were to be looking at putting in rooftop solar and battery, which the prior caller just said, then we need to develop those tools. And so part of strategic planning, and I think, let's go back to where we are today, which is step one of strategic planning was transition. Acknowledge, how do you measure value? That's the first thing we did. We have that now. So we measure it in community, environmental, customer, and financial. Notice only one of the four is actually financial, right? And so we do look under the prism. I think the other main thing, look at the building.
That's right. We didn't even get to the fact
where did people think we were
moving to a new building.
Yeah, where was it? It was predetermined where we were going, right? Where was the predetermined?
You're talking about Lot J, and you're not
where
going
are
there.
We? Yeah. So what you see is a utility focusing on how do we design the best services for our customers and our community. We're making the right choices.
I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely.
I appreciate
this is a great conversation.
I
thank you so
you
much.
Rolling with all my questions and those from the listeners. So Aaron Zahn, CEO of JEA, thank you so much for this extended discussion. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much.
And later in the hour, if you love golf, don't miss the premiere of Loopers, a new film about caddies. Up next as well, addressing issues with Florida's child welfare system. We'll be right back.
Florida Eye Specialists is committed to treating cataracts in Northeast Florida through advanced laser cataract technology and research. 12 board-certified eye surgeons in 8 locations. FloridaEyeSpecialists.com for a consultation. Mayo Clinic. When you are searching for answers that can change your life, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida.
Hi, I'm David McGowan, President and CEO of WJCT. Join me on June 18th for an evening with Frontline's Michael Kirk. We'll discuss his recent documentary on the Supreme Court and his distinguished career as one of this country's leading documentary filmmakers. That's Tuesday evening, June 18th. Visit wjct.org/events for tickets and more information.
Welcome back. Well, it's a growing issue involving the state's child welfare system. The Family First Prevention Services Act was part of a spending bill signed by President Trump last year. It's intended to reduce the number of Florida kids going into foster care. Seems like a good idea. More money will go toward at-home parenting classes, mental health counseling, and substance abuse treatment. And starting in October, Florida will be reimbursed for the number of children it keeps with their families before states were reimbursed when a child was placed into state care. However, some child care providers are seeing unintended consequences from this change. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Maria Knapp. She's a vice president with the Florida Sheriff's Youth Ranches. She's here now with more. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so this sounds like a great idea, you know, reducing the number of kids in foster care, keeping families together. But what Florida providers are starting to see are some problems with this well-intentioned legislation. What's happening?
Well, Florida has already walked this path that the federal government is pushing through to the rest of the United States. The state of Florida was fortunate to receive a waiver in the early 2000s with a mandate to take this money and construct the best possible child welfare system. And so the state of Florida took on that charge, which included those front-end services, wraparound services in home care, reducing out-of-home placements, reducing the use of residential group homes, which is what the Florida Sheriff's Youth Ranches provides. Mm-hmm. And in that time, there were a lot of deaths in wraparound service situations. There's an article the Miami Herald did sharing those stories in-depthly. So when the Family First really started to gain momentum, you know, we were sharing the story. Florida's walked that path, and we have settled out with a continuum of care here in Florida. So we do have in-home services and foster homes, residential group homes, residential treatment, and then on into mental health to take care of children. So our concern is that Family First is moving money to front end, which is a good thing. However, it's putting a gap in the child care system, pulling out placements. Florida already has a significant shortage of foster homes. It's a challenge all over Florida. It's a challenge all over the United States. And there's a lot of effort to recruit foster parents, but we still have that hole. And when you talk about pulling residential group homes out as an option and pulling that funding away, you're immediately reducing the number of beds available for children.
Is it accurate that child welfare officials are now using offices, hotels, other strange settings to house foster kids because residential group homes are losing funding?
Well, there's been some high-profile stories around the state of incidents where those kinds of situations have been used. We're seeing some more distressing things in other states due to the fact that some have had fully embraced the shift in the system of care. States like Oregon have had some stories and reports of repurposing jails to take care of children and have a living space. And children in Illinois having an extended, for lack of a better word, extended stay in mental health treatment when actually their treatment services are done, but there's no home for those children to go back to because this large push to redirect funds away from residential group care.
Other states have gone to a different model. They use some private donations along with state and federal funds. The youth ranches, you raise 80% of the funds that you use to take care of the kids in your program. So what do you think is a solution, I guess, for Florida to try?
Well, I think that our state does need to embrace the fact that our residential group homes do bring a lot of private funding into the system when you're talking about the beds that are available. You know, Florida is on track with trying to recruit additional foster homes and foster families, a lot of support for that avenue of care. But when it comes down to it, even right now, the state is looking at capacity, concerned about a lack of capacity, and constrained financially. You know, when looking at what can we do to meet these definitions at the federal level to be able to draw down those funds, because federal funds are 46% of Florida's child welfare money.
Wow. Okay, so you're raising the alarm now, you and other players in the foster care space. Is the legislature looking at this? Are they hearing what you're saying?
There's a lot of work this summer going into what does the model of care look like and how we're going to fund it. I think ultimately we're going to be hard-pressed to not say state of Florida, legislators especially, you guys are going to have to put some more funds into the system. There will be a well-rounded picture by the end of the summer. A lot of us are working on work groups with the Department of Children and Families and other entities to paint that picture to show the legislature what kind of support we're really going to need to make this happen.
We're talking about tens of thousands of kids across the state that are affected by these changes.
Yes.
It's not a small thing.
It is not a small thing. You have over 20,000 children in out-of-home care. You have at least 10% of them in residential group homes. So people are taking a gamble that in-home services are going to be able to absorb that. But we know that Florida's been down that path. Florida has looked at how to manage in-home services and reduce that. So we are the example, and it's been shared at federal levels that, well, Florida's on track and Florida's the example, but you still aren't where we want you to be. And we find that discouraging because I think when you look at what the state of Florida's done and the number of providers have done, we've worked really hard to make sure kids have the best opportunities from beginning to end.
Thanks for sharing all of this with us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Maria Knapp with Florida Sheriff's Youth Ranches joining the show. And up next, a new film about caddies, narrated by the most famous movie caddy of all time. You know who it is. We'll be right back.
Mayo Clinic. If you're looking for answers no one else has been able to find, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida.
The AMP presents The National with guest Courtney Barnett on June 17th for their only Florida show. The National have just released their eighth album, I Am Easy to Find. Tickets for The National are available at Ticketmaster.com.
The Great Recession did huge economic damage. It is damage that is lasting.
When a factory leaves, it devastates a community. It doesn't just lose jobs. It loses so many forms of meaning.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, 3 years on the road documenting those losses. Next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, breaking the story of R&B star R. Kelly's underage sexual victims. We talk with Jim DeRogatis. The stories he broke include the sex tape, or rape tape, that led to Kelly's 2008 trial, and the sex cult that Kelly ran. DeRogatis has spoken to many of Kelly's victims. He has a new book called Soulless, The Case Against R. Kelly. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The Charleston church shooting forced many families to answer a tough question. How do you forgive the unthinkable? Some turn to their faith, using the Bible as a guide to push past their rage and find peace. But is the expectation to absolve the shooter a fair one? Can you find grace and purpose in anger? Faith and forgiveness. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. You can see that gopher dancing right now, can't you? I know I can. Well, finally this hour, it's a love affair to that indispensable element on any golf course, the caddy. Take a listen to this.
Since the game began, they've been there. Always seen, but rarely heard. From humble beginnings to the big time, they don't just whisper advice from the shadows. They are an integral part of the game.
Caddying used to be the guy who worked in the barn or worked in the kitchen. They weren't very well thought of. They just carried the bag, and that's all they did.
An 18-hole round, we call it a loop, so we call ourselves loopers.
When I first started, I got $3 a bag, and then they bumped it to $4. Yeah. The money got out of control. It almost got away from me.
The new film is called Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, and it's screening in Jacksonville and St. Augustine this month. Here's the special treat. As you just heard, perhaps the most famous movie caddy of all time, Bill Murray, is the narrator. Loopers looks at the incredible bond that a golfer and a caddy develop through all those hours of time together. Jacksonville's own Ward Clayton is a producer of the film, and he appears in it, too. He joins us now. Hey, good morning.
Melissa, good morning. How are you?
I'm really good. And I just heard about this from you the other day, so it's exciting to have you on to talk about Loopers, which I'd never heard that term before. But that's what caddies call themselves. How'd this film come together?
15 years ago, I wrote a book on the caddies at Augusta National. And 5 years ago, somebody passed it along to Jim Packer, who's a film executive. He read it, cold called me, and here we are 5 years later after going to Scotland and Ireland, Pebble, Bandon Dunes, Augusta National, all over the place.
So. Wow. So you went from writing a book to all of a sudden you're producing a film with Bill Murray narrating. That's a pretty amazing journey.
I don't know if I'm a film mogul now or not, but
you
still
are.
But still I'm involved.
You're
with
our
it.
New movie mogul.
Exactly. So it's been really cool, and having Bill Murray do the narration has really added a level to it. As I mentioned earlier to you off air, that he's doing a narration on a caddy documentary, and then he's a small town cop in a zombie movie the following weekend. So.
Of course, you can't really think about golf in America without thinking of Bill Murray. I can't think of another celebrity more closely associated with the game. So was it an easy sell to get him to narrate those?
A six-month process.
Really?
Bill does not have an agent.
Yeah, famously. You have to call his answering machine.
800 number and an attorney.
Yeah.
And so he lives in Charleston, and on a Friday, his attorney called the guys in L.A. and said, you need to be here Sunday to do the narration. So they had to scramble across the country and sit down 3 hours for him and do the narration. And You know, he takes scripts on his own, so it was a little bit of a tug of war, but it worked out great. And I think in this film, he comes across as very serious about how caddying is a cornerstone like Second City TV, Saturday Night Live, and National Lampoon. He says caddying was instrumental in developing who he is.
Sure. He and his brothers caddied up in Wilmette, Illinois as young boys. So this is all about the relationship between the caddy and the player, which is something that doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's important.
I think that's the biggest thing we learned in this. It wasn't just how guys read greens or gals read greens or pull clubs, but it's how you interact with somebody. For example, Melissa, if you're out there and you make a couple of bogeys, it's the caddy's job to pick you up. But you make a couple of birdies, it's his job to sort of make sure you don't get overexcited.
I would never be making any birdies, so. But I can imagine myself maybe doing that. You're a golfer, though, so this is something I can tell is a passion for you. It's exciting, I'm sure, to have this finally on a big screen.
Oh, it's awesome. I think it gives people a slice of golf that they see on TV every week, or when they go to a resort, they may have a caddy, but they get the sense for how these people work. They're almost amateur psychologists. They're mother figures. They're, you know, doctors. They're a little bit of everything. You got to have a little bit of all this psychology inside of your head when you're a caddy.
Yeah. So much of golf is a head fake. Yeah. It's just one of those things that you almost have to have the passion for the sport and play it to really feel this in your heart. But there are so many people like that in this community. And, you know, the First Coast is so known for golf that it's exciting to talk about the premiere of this film here in Jacksonville. It is Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, is premiering Friday night at Tinseltown and later in the month at the Corazon in St. Augustine. So you're inviting everyone to come out this Friday to the big premiere. You'll be there.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce the film Friday night, and we're going to have some people afterwards. We'll have a caddy who will be doing a Q&A. We're going to get a writer and maybe somebody else to come and participate and do a Q&A afterwards to talk about what goes into caddying, how caddies are important, and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Go on out for the premiere Friday night at Tinseltown Theater in Jacksonville of Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, narrated by Bill Murray himself. Loopersmovie.com for more. And Ward Clayton, kudos to you. Pretty exciting stuff. Thanks for coming by to tell us about it.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. On tomorrow's show, a conversation with famed musician Steve Earle performing at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall this week. That's coming up tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.